Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
Good morning. Welcome to the Sunday edition of Racing Across America. I am Seth Merrow. Thanks for joining us as always. We appreciate it. This morning, we'll take a look at a little of the stakes action. Aqueduct, the Alex M. Robb, and then the nice stakes yesterday at Gulfstream. And we'll also, since we talked about it yesterday with our friend Dick Powell, we'll take a look at what happened overnight in Hong Kong, the Hong Kong International Races. Some of the horses we hit on in our discussion yesterday ran well. So we'll look at those also a little bit later on. A little handicapping. Maybe we'll take a look at a little Aqueduct for this afternoon. And then we will, at the end of the program, the last segment, we'll be joined by our friend Steve Bick. Our annual holiday gift suggestions, some book suggestions and whatnot, and some conversation with Steve coming up a little bit later on. So looking forward to all of it. Hopefully you are too. Don't let me forget to remind you that if you want to watch some football action and some racing action every Sunday afternoon throughout the NFL season, you can come here to the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue in Albany, and enjoy football Sundays right here at the Clubhouse Racebook. As I say, every Sunday throughout the season, all the football, all the racing action as well. Yesterday at the Racebook, we had yet another bankroll, and I am I'm on a rough streak. Again, apologies to the bankroll team. That's pretty much the third straight over the past few weeks bankroll where I typically I go back and look, and sometimes there are places where you can say, I made a mistake here, or I could have done a different kind of a wager here. But yesterday it was just, once again, the thoughts I had, you know, like the Largent race, you could have, if you were jumping on the other Pletcher, you could have seen it. But, and I took a shot in there with the spooky channel, but I kind of had the thought right of the race would collapse a little bit. But it was a tough go again for the bankroll team. But we'll have another bankroll coming up on New Year's Eve, so folks can look forward to that. Hopefully things juice up a little better for the bankroll team there. All right, let's get into it and talk a little racing from yesterday. Aqueduct, again, was the site for the Alex M. Robb State Breds facing off, going a mile and an eighth. And Mr. Buff took the action as the 6-5 favorite. I took a little pop against Mr. Buff. I put Bank It over Mr. Buff just on the fact that, you know, clearly this wasn't in the game plan because Mr. Buff had just run last week in the Cigar Mile and was a disappointing fifth in there. So, again, whenever horses and connections kind of have to veer away from what's in the plan, you always wonder, are we going to get the best effort? So I took a look, even though, again, Mr. Buff is one of those horses we all say we like to root for, I took a little shot against and put him down in the second spot, and I thought Bank It, a horse I've liked for a while, maybe the direction to go as the alternative, and that's the way it turned out. In the stretch, number six, Bank It will push by Mr. Buff. Yankee Division runs third. It's number six, Bank It, number four, Mr. Buff, number two, Yankee Division, number one, Seafoam, 1, 2, 3, 4. Bank It pulls away nicely here. Chart margin at just under 5 lengths at 5-2. Gets it done at a 770 price for Steve Ashmussen and Winchell Thoroughbreds. Again, getting it done over Mr. Buff, who, as I say, just a little bit of a question mark on the turnaround after the poor performance in the Cigar Mile. I say poor performance. I mean, I was up there kind of pushing the pace and then just faded late. But it seems like an open company this year. Mr. Buff has been up against it. State Bred Company has been very, very competitive. But again, on the quick turnaround, wound up second yesterday in the Alex Robb to Bank It. That was Bank It's first win of the year. I have said when I've talked about that horse, the stakes preview, and when I was not that handicapper support yesterday, I said, and having talked about him in other races this year, horse I've liked throughout the career and hasn't really come through for me on a number of occasions, but gets his initial win of the year and what you would assume would be the last start of the year for Bank It. Nice win yesterday, as I say, by almost 5 lengths in the Alex M. Robb. All right, let's move on to Gulfstream Park, really nice stakes day. Had Ron Nicoletti on yesterday talking about this. Mike Callahan and I talked about this these stakes races at Gulfstream on the stakes preview this week as well. And in the Rampart, I said I liked Latruska to just speed pop him. Had Ron Nicoletti on yesterday. He said the same, and that was how it worked out in the Rampart. Latruska, the number five horse, goes off as a 3-2 favorite and takes them all the way around, hits the stretch and actually opens up, wins by just under seven lengths, again, at 3-2. Dreamery, the number six, runs second. Bajan Girl, who was a close-up second choice at 9-5, winds up third in here. But Latruska getting it done. I had shown on the stakes preview. And again, with Ron yesterday, we showed the Shoe V up at Saratoga, where Latruska at a mile and an eighth had taken them all the way around. Subsequently wound up fourth after making the early pace in the Beldame at Belmont. I thought this horse, though, had the potential to one-turn mile yesterday to do what we saw up at Saratoga and get out there and lead them all the way around. And that was how it worked out yesterday in the Rampart. Latruska getting it done. That was her fourth win in seven starts this year. So a really nice season for Latruska yesterday, being capped off in the Rampart. All right, let's move on to a little later in the day, the Sugar Swirl. Ron liked Ladies Island, Ron Nicoletti, when I had him on yesterday. I took a shot with Golden Ami coming down from Woodbine for Josie Carroll, who was 2-for-2. Golden Ami, winds up last in the field here. 7-2 is the second choice. The favorite was Cinnabunny, the number five, at just over even money. Winds up third. But as I say, Ron liked Ladies Island. Ladies Island gets it done on the front end. There is a late run here, so the chart margin winds up to be just ahead over number four, Bronx Beauty. Cinnabunny, the favorite, winds up third and kind of a blanket finish there for second, third, and fourth. But Ladies Island does hold on for Georgina Baxter, Matisse, and Avril Racing. We're going to take a look. I think we have the head on here where you will see the stewards took a long look, and I was kind of surprised. I thought they may take the horse down because Ladies Island kind of comes out, and Cinnabunny gets bothered a little bit here. And as I say, I was a little bit surprised they kept the horse up. I was happy they did, rooting for our friends Matisse Boys and Rich Averill, and they own Ladies Island, and so I was rooting for them. And after the stewards took the look, they did keep Ladies Island up, and so congratulations to Averill Racing and Matisse Racing, the co-owners, Georgina Baxter Training and Jaramillo, the jockey. And I don't know, do we have the head on?
No, we don't.
No head on, but. As I say, you saw Ladies Island come out a little bit, and as I looked, I thought, oh, this is dicey. But the stewards, and it may have been one of them, where the stewards, you know what was funny about the replay, too? When you looked at the pan, it didn't look that bad. It really looked like nothing. When you looked at the head-on, though, there was something there. It was a tale of two angles, and the pan really was kind of complete. You know, a lot of times the head-on is more informative, a lot of times, most of the time probably, but you still see things in the pan shot. With this one yesterday, with the pan shot, you wouldn't have thought, yeah, okay, that's not, but then you looked at the head-on and it was a little bit different. But again, happy that they kept the horse up for some connections that we've had on the show and local connections as well. And I think Duke Batiste was, if I was seeing right behind the mask, it looked like Duke was down in the winner's circle. Rich Averill, I'm pretty sure, was down there as well. All right, let's move on to the Mike Charmer. And I wasn't going to show this replay necessarily because it was an ungraded stakes race. But after the win, I had to pull it up because it's going to be our friends at Saratoga Stable. So again, local connections there as well. Jack Knowlton, Saratoga Stable, and Barkley Tag in the My Charmer yesterday, with Nico's Dream getting up. Post-race comments from Barkley Tag. He said, you know what, I thought I was putting her in a little deep, but she's honest, and so we decided to give her a shot. And they're happy they did, as are the folks who bet on Nico's Dream at 13-1. Nico's Dream, the number one horse there. You can see in the second, Toga Silks Tuned coming up to run second. And Art of Almost runs third. The favorite was Lady Lawyer at 3-2. Horse I liked as well, coming off a win in Allowance Company up at Keeneland. For Chad Brown, Gaffleone on board. Oof, that one winds up sixth in the field of seven. So a little bit of a disappointment from Lady Lawyer. But, again, a nice performance for Nico's Dream, the four-year-old filly for Saratoga & Company. And, again, nice to see those connections get it done, like many of, maybe all of their horses, but certainly many of their horses. A New York bred Nico's Dream comes down and beats the Open Company in the My Charmer to get the fourth win in 17 career starts, put the earnings over $250,000. So again, hats off to the folks at Saratoga for the nice win yesterday. And Barkley Tag as well, as I say, who said, you know, I thought maybe you'd taken a little pop with her, a little shot with her, maybe over her head, but they, you know, that's what horse racing is all about. Take your shot. You can't win if you're not in. And so they got it done yesterday in the My Charmer. Harlan's Holiday yesterday at Gulfstream. Three-year-olds and up going 8.5 furlongs. This may have been the nicest performance of the day because Tax, coming off a layoff since Oaklawn, ran in the Oaklawn Handicap on May 2nd. So a May to December layoff. Danny Gargan said after the race the horse has been training very well, so he had some level of confidence. But Tax comes back yesterday in the Harlan's Holiday, chart margin 4.5 lengths, and he looked good. I haven't seen any numbers yet, but as the 2-1 second choice gets it done, number one Tax, number four Eye of the Jedi second, and the favorite Fat Man at 2-1, number two runs third. But as you can see there, Tax looking really good off a long layoff. Danny Gargan said, game plan now, go on to the Pegasus, and off of that, you would think Tax, that's a good move for Randy Hill and Reeves Thoroughbred, Danny Gargan and company. Luis Saez was on board. He's off to a nice start down there at Gulfstream. Paco Lopez, good start as well. Nice jockey colony down there at Gulfstream this winter. It's going to be fun to watch. Tot Weege, the horse from Pletcher that I thought was going to be interesting in here. Disappointing sixth in the field of seven as the third choice at 5-2. That was the first run in stakes company for Tot Weege. We will see what's up next for that one, because hadn't tried stakes company yet, but before yesterday was 3-4 with some nice wins all at Gulfstream. So it was a little bit disappointing to see that sixth place finish in the stakes debut yesterday. All right, moving on to the Fort Lauderdale at Gulfstream. As I say, yesterday with the bankroll, I took a little pop, talked about this on the stakes preview and when we had Ron in yesterday. I took a little pop with Spooky Channel because I thought, you know, boy, there is a lot of speed in here, and I had a feeling it may fall apart at the end. It did. Spooky Channel, the number eight at 17-1. An okay fourth, I guess. But Largent, who was kind of the other Pletcher in the race behind Halliday. Halliday had the lead early. And the way Halliday was leading, I thought was in a good spot. But Halliday, the number 10, you can see fading there as the 3-1 second choice. At 2-1, factor this, the favorite winds up eighth, who was also up kind of pressuring Halliday early. But again, I thought Halliday was kind of loping along with an open lead. The fractions were honest, though, 23 and 46, 109. So sometimes you have that open lead. I kind of think, regardless how fast it is, you're not really getting pushed. So I thought Halliday was in a good spot, perhaps. But those early fractions did take their toll. Again, Halliday winds up seventh. The favorite factor this was pressing, but, you know, a length or so back. He was the favorite, winds up eighth in here. But Largent closes at 16-1. Doswell, who I thought was interesting. I mentioned on the handicappers report that Doswell was one that I could have made a case for at a price, and that one at 15-1 winds up second. Breaking the Rules, the number four for Shug McGahey, runs third in here. And I know Mike talked about that one on the stakes preview. Spooky Channel, again, who I like to close, did close, but wound up fourth. But 16-1, 15-1, 10-1, 17-1, 1, 2, 3, 4. in the Fort Lauderdale yesterday for a buck. You got 223 for your exacta, nice little exacta for 50 cents. This is not a bad 50 cent try. $944 yesterday in the Fort Lauderdale for the Largent Doswell breaking the rules trifecta. And again, what was interesting also was Largent, you know, I said there's going to be a lot of early speed potentially. Largent has shown early speed in the past. Doswell had shown early speed in the past. But clearly somebody was reading the PPs. And Todd Pletcher after the race said, it seemed like there was a lot of speed in the race. So I told Paco Lopez if he can kind of duck in the pocket and kind of sit off. And early on, Largent sitting seventh. Doswell was fourth or fifth. And so horses with normally some early speed kind of looked at the other early speed in the race and said, let's sit back a little bit this afternoon and make a late run. They did. It paid off. And so some big numbers in the Fort Lauderdale yesterday at Gulfstream. All right, let's take a look at some of the action again. Hong Kong, I mentioned yesterday, kind of puts an exclamation point on the international racing season every year. Hong Kong, the international races, attracts some nice horses from Europe. You usually see some horses that have participated in the Breeders' Cup. That was the case as well yesterday. When we were talking with our friend Dick Paul yesterday, we talked about Mogul a little bit. Dick liked Exultant. And we're going to watch. Exultant is going to have the lead here. Exultant, the number one horse. But in the Tabor Magner silks there with the orange and blue striped cap, Mogul. I had shown a replay of Mogul yesterday in the Prix de Paris, Prix de Paris, which was a really nice race, a nice win for this one, two back. Subsequently had come here and run fifth in the Breeders' Cup turf. But now goes to Hong Kong, and you can see Mogul there in those Tabor Magner silks getting it done. Exultant winds up running second, Columbus County third, but a nice performance by Mogul. Aiden O'Brien, Ryan Moore with a nice little three-year-old, I should mention that as well, going over to Hong Kong and capping off a pretty nice season. Now 5 for 10 lifetime for the potent European connections, and a nice performance yesterday in the Hong Kong Vaz. It was Mogul getting it done. And again, it was a horse we talked a little bit about yesterday as well. Let's move on and take a look at the Hong Kong Sprint. Another horse we talked about. First, we had mentioned, I had talked a little bit about Classic Legend, who, you know, Australian turf sprinters. You go back the last 5-10 years, boy, they're potent. And this horse, a really nice Classic Legend, a really nice Australian turf sprinter. But boy, not yesterday. Classic Legend winds up running 11th in the field of 14. And I'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute or so. But Classic Legend, a little bit of a dud. Wishful Thinker, that's the horse Dick liked a little bit, and that one is going to wind up fourth here. And both Dick and I talked about Dan and Smash, the Japanese horse that had shown some real ability. And I said, I had pulled up a replay from Classic Legend, and I said when I talked yesterday, I originally was going to pull up the replay from Dan and Smash. There was also some workout videos that looked pretty good at Hong Kong of the horse prepping. Dan and Smash is going to get it done, the Japanese horse. Ryan Moore on board. So in the first two Hong Kong international races of the night or of the afternoon in Hong Kong, he gets it done. You can see Dan and Smash there pulling away from that cavalry charge to get it done in the Hong Kong Sprint. And it was interesting. I said I pulled up some workout videos a couple of days ago of Dan and Smash, and Ryan Moore had been on, and they talked to him after the workouts, and he said, yeah, it was an okay workout, but we're up against it, going against the locals here. They've got a pretty good group, but Dan and Smash gets it done. And as I say, when I looked at the workouts, I thought they looked pretty good. I'm not a super judge of that, but Dan and Smash validates it. The Japanese Invader comes over and gets it done at Hong Kong in the Hong Kong Sprint. And as I say, going to talk a little bit about Classic Legend as well. I'll see if I can pull it up in the comments here. I said yesterday when I talked to Dick Powell, if you go to the Hong Kong Jockey Club website, that just the amount of information there makes us jealous as American race fans. They have a lot of information. You can pull up replays. You can pull up pictures of the entire field at various points during the race. And the chart comments are also interesting. Plus, the way that the stewards and whatnot look at the race is a little bit different. So there are various comments about Classic Legend. Again, the favorite Australian sprinter had shown a lot of talent in the career. Nice win in Australia coming into this. It had a barrier trial subsequently. Dick mentioned the barrier trial he was not thrilled with necessarily. Barrier trial being, if you're unfamiliar, foreign jurisdictions, it's kind of a workout, but run more in race fashion. But anyway, if you read the chart comments here, they make comments, various points on the race of the runners, including Classic Legend. But then you get down towards the end of the comments. When questioned regarding the disappointing performance of Classic Legend, the jockey stated that whilst he would have preferred to have raced away from the rail, the circumstances of the race and the run to the first turn resulted in him being placed on the inside. He said after being awkwardly placed behind Jolly Banner, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But a veterinary inspection immediately following the race did not show any significant findings. And here's the interesting part. The performance of Classic Legend, a favored runner in today's race, was considered unacceptable. Before being allowed to race again, Classic Legend will be required to perform to the satisfaction of the stewards in a barrier trial and be subjected to an official veterinary examination. Yeah. You can see it's a little different over there. Horse runs poorly as a favorite, and they do not take that lightly, clearly. So Classic Legend, a little bit disappointing yesterday in the Hong Kong Sprint. But Dan and Smash, the Japanese Invader, looking pretty good. All right, and let's move on finally to, there's a couple more. Let's take a look at the Hong Kong Mile. Again, a horse that we had talked about yesterday, Golden 60, coming in from, locally based, an Australian bred, but locally based. Not only locally based, but as we mentioned yesterday, 13 for 14. Kind of a superstar in Hong Kong. Had won the Jockey Club Mile there 3 weeks ago. We looked at that replay yesterday. And now we'll look at him getting it done in the Hong Kong Mile last night our time. Golden 60. And it was fun to watch the announcer. It says, yeah, he makes a beast move. And just had all kinds of superlatives coming down the stretch for Golden 60. Because, again, he's kind of a superstar down there. Now has run his record to 14 for 15 starts and getting it done. Southern Legend second. Admire Mars runs third. But a good performance from Golden 60 yesterday in the Hong Kong Mile. Again, a horse we kind of focused on when we talked about this one yesterday, and focused on in an obvious fashion when you have a horse like that, but validated the thoughts going in, and continues to run very well down there in Hong Kong, running his record, as I say, now to just a kind of phenomenal and incredible 14 wins in the 15 career starts for Golden 60. All right, let me move on now to, finally, the Hong Kong Cup. This one was a little more of an upset. Again, we had talked about the horses yesterday that won the first three races on the card. The horse we talked about yesterday for the Hong Kong Cup was obviously Magical, the very nice European race mare for Aidan O'Brien and Ryan Moore. Magical is going to wind up running third in here, however. Normcore gets it done. Normcore, Japanese-based runner, comes in and gets it done in, Hong Kong Cup over Windbright with Magical running third. Magical's in the purple there. You can see her a couple out from the rail getting a late run where you thought, oh, she's in a pretty good spot maybe, and then you think, oh, she's at least going to get second, but no, gets nipped for second as well. So a little bit disappointing for Magical, who was coming off the nice performance behind Tarnawa in the Breeders' Cup here most recently, but goes over to Hong Kong and can wind up no better than third behind Norm Cor in that Hong Kong Cup. So again, that takes you through some of the international races. They were late last night, so that's probably the first look most people would have had at the first of those Hong Kong international races, 1 a.m. last night. But as I said, you could have bet the races and then taken a little snooze and pulled up some replays this morning, because they were certainly races worth taking a look at, with, again, some familiar names, as every year, of horses that either we paid attention to over in Europe during the year or ran in the Breeders' Cup, or maybe if you do watch the European racing news or the Asian racing news, you would have picked up on some of the horses like Golden 60, certainly making some news already. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, quick look at some races at Aqueduct, and then a few minutes after that, be joined by our friend Steve Bick, annual holiday visit, to give you some ideas for maybe gifts for your racing friends and family. All of that right after this. Stay tuned. Did you say?
Where's the best place to find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing? Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you where's the best sports bar in the Capital Region, tell them Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
What if there was a way to become a better horse player, to have a better knowledge of the game, to be more successful? What if there were a way to take what you've learned, what you know, and make better decisions, better choices? In horse racing, knowledge is a powerful tool. Race results and replays, past performances and live streaming, wagering from all your digital devices. Capital OTB. Become a better horse player.
Stone is an outside front. They're coming down to the finish. Can Smarty Jones hold on? Here comes Birdstone. Birdstone surges past. Birdstone wins the Belmont Stakes.
In front, but here comes High Chaparral. High Chaparral, the defending champ, to take it to Papa. These two are travels head to head with Joe Hart bearing down on them. It's going to be a three-horse photo finish in the turn. Here's the wire. Photo finish.
Welcome back to Racing Across America on this Sunday morning. We just took a little review, now a little preview, perhaps, as usual, during the handicapping segment. We'll take a look at some of the action for this afternoon and take a look maybe at the late pick four today at Aqueduct. And again, haven't had a chance to pull up any scratches. I'm doubting they're up at this point. Usually about 11 o'clock, the scratches and changes will get pulled up. But we'll take a look again today. December 13th, a lucky Sunday the 13th, Aqueduct's late pick four starts in race number six. Sixth race today, state bred claimers going seven furlongs. I went 5, 8, 3, and 9. JC's Shooting Star on top for a Dave Donk. A couple of races recently that may have the horse primed. The last race was a similar race and ran third. Last time, but it was a sloppy sealed track. I think the numbers you go down the page are a little bit better than what we've seen recently. I'm hoping this horse can kind of rebound with those. But I think on a, even if we get close to those, I think with this field, the horse is going to fit nicely. And that's just, as I looked and kind of was going, which direction do I go? I landed on JC's Shooting Star, not with an abundance of confidence, but just thinking, I think this group horse is going to fit all right with. Awesome Alana, morning line favorite, I believe, at 5-2. Yes. Claimed out of a similar event, two back with a good second, and then went against maybe a little saltier last time at the mile. Now cuts back to seven furlongs, gets back probably to the comfort zone. So that one's logical as well. Third spot will go with Cartwheel. I'm hoping this horse gets back to a little more of a speed pop kind of a scenario. Further down the page, this horse did tend to show some early speed, but has been very lightly raced this year with some stops and some starts, February, July, October. Now kind of gets to string a couple together and moves down into the claiming ranks to, again, hopefully find the comfort zone. And that, I'm hoping, stringing a couple together, moving down a little bit, we get back more to having shown some early speed, which I think could be beneficial potentially for cartwheel. So the sixth at Aqueduct today, 5-8, 3-9. Race number 7 at Aqueduct this afternoon, $16,000 claimers going the one turn mile, 9, 4, 6, and 2, above Flowers for Lisa on top. Claim 3 starts back at the 16 level, same as today. Then they got ambitious. They moved to the 32 level immediately. Didn't show much there. A little improvement last time at the 20 level. Now third start back. I think they're getting maybe realistic and just going back to maybe more of where this horse belongs at the 16 level. And we'll look for a rebound to what we saw in the race where the horse was claimed 3 back, where the horse ran a good second with a solid number compared to this bunch. Grit and Glory goes out for Linda Rice, also getting some class relief. This class relief is a little more of a head-scratcher, although they claimed the horse back in June for $14,000. Then they won a $14,000, and then they went into some allowance events. So the drop down off of the allowance events looks like kind of a precipitous drop, but you have to go back and see. They picked the horse up for 14. They won a 14. They placed 2 back in allowance company. So they put some money in the bank now, and you know, placing a win, a claim here, and they're okay financially. So again, you look at the last 4 races and you say, it's kind of a steep drop to go right down to the 16 level, but not so much so if you really go back down the page and see what they picked the horse up for. Runabout in the third spot for me. Kind of tossed in a clunker last time, which makes you scratch your chin a little bit. But I think overall the horse is likely better than that. I mean, that last looks like a little bit of an aberration that I think we have a chance to bounce back from. So in the seventh at Aqueduct, 9, 4, 6, and 2. Eighth race at Aqueduct this afternoon, optional claimer, non-winners of 2 other than 5, 4, 1, and 7. Daphne Moon on top, Jeremiah Engelhart trainee. Had a break from Oaklawn in May until the middle of October down at Laurel. The comeback was a decent little second place finish. I think that should have the horse set up to run well this afternoon and maybe move forward. Horse has shown some flashes in the first 6 starts of the career for Jeremiah and Al Gold. So Daphne Moon, I think, is a logical player in here. Second choice, though, 2-1, slightly behind Foxtail, the 9-5 favorite. And Foxtail, can't argue, I have that one right underneath. 4 wins and 6 starts this year, comes in on a 2-race win streak, September and early October. So it's been on the sidelines for a couple of months now. You know, 21st century, that's not a super notable kind of a layoff. But I thought it was enough that, you know, given what we've seen and maybe being a little more lightly raced, Daphne Moon with maybe a little more upside potential and a little bit of a layoff for Foxtail, I'll put them in the order I have them in. 5 over the 4. And UJ, if I was anywhere close to the pronunciation on that, coming in off a good second place finish last time against similar, in a fairly similar race. It was at 7 furlongs, but it was a good closing effort that says, at the mile, maybe we'll be okay as well. Kendrick Carmouche on board. So the eighth race at Aqueduct, 5, 4, 1, and 7. Ninth and final at Aqueduct this afternoon. I wonder what kind of action the number 13 Lasagna gets, because has been kind of hit or miss throughout the career. But it seems like one of those horses that becomes a hunch bet for Lasagna fans. But as I say, been single digits in 3 races and double digits in 4 races. So not necessarily taking the Italian food action in most of the races. I did not use Lasagna, although I do like Lasagna. I have an 11, 12, 14, and 8, however. I put Nikki Scissors on top, Rob Atras, Michael Dubb and company. Comes in off a decent little try last time up at the Finger Lakes. Now moves into the Rob Atras barn. Originally was with Jason Service, then Brad Cox was with Paul Barrow up at Finger Lakes, but moves into the Rob Atras barn for the winter down here in New York. Has run well at Aqueduct before. Drops down to this 16 claiming level, and I think that's potent given what we've seen from this horse so far, and should provide a little bit of a wake-up call. There to try in the second slot. Have to draw a line through the last one, but it does leave a question mark, particularly since it was a voided claim race. It was a poor performance. The races before that, however, fit, so I'm going to give Dare to Try one more shot. And then in the third position, La Negrita. Good little second place finish in a similar event last time, albeit over a muddy seal track, but has run well on various types of surfaces previously and is in the hunt more often than not, certainly this year. One win, 5 seconds, 2/3 in 9 starts so far this year. So you have to have Lana Greed at least in the mix. The outside post position is no bonus, certainly, but I have it in the 9th and final on a Sunday afternoon at Aqueduct, 11, 12, 14, and 8. We'll be talking more about those races a little bit later this afternoon on OTB Live when we fire up for that. But coming up after this break, our friend Steve Bick, and again, the annual conversation of holiday gifts for folks out there who you may know are racing fans, books and more, to add some holiday cheer to a racing fan's season. And this is a season where we all need some cheer. So we'll look for Mr. Bick to cheer us up after the break. We'll be back right after this. Stay tuned. Having trouble finding us? It's actually quite simple. Whether online or on your TV, it's never been easier to watch and wager on championship horse racing with Capital OTB. Simply log on to CapitalOTBBet.com. There you can watch our morning shows, live stream races, and wager on our state-of-the-art wagering platform. You can also watch from the comfort of your home on Spectrum Cable Channel 1250 or Fios Channel 467. And win more with Capital OTB.
No matter where in the world you are, the excitement of wagering on horse racing is just a click away. You'll get live streaming, past performances, race replays, our virtual tote board, analysis and selections from professional handicappers, a simple, safe, and secure wagering platform, and best of all, you get track prices. CapitalOTBBet.com. Bet any place, anytime at CapitalOTBBet.com. And be sure to download our new mobile app from the iTunes Store or Google Play. In a recent study of some of the top online wagering sites, Capital OTB won big in total player rewards, far surpassing some of the best-known wagering sites in America. While other rewards programs simply offer you points redeemable for gift cards, Capital OTB's rebates are paid to you in actual cash. Plus, Capital OTB gives you full and immediate access to your money. So if all you're getting now are points and gift cards, join Capital OTB Player Rewards today and get cash back. Visit CapitalOTBBet.com and sign up today.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. Seth Merrill in the studio. We are joined via Zoom by our friend Steve Bick. Steve, good morning.
Seth, good morning. Good morning, everybody.
Happy to have you on board. And as I say, it is the holiday season, so I'll wish you a happy Hanukkah.
Thanks so much. Fourth night tonight. We had a nice supply of latkes made the other night. And nice. Down, you know, kind of getting down to, might have to make another batch for the rest of the holiday, but it's been good so far.
You're the food guy. How do you eat a latke?
I like both. I like both sour cream and applesauce.
The applesauce, yeah, it's me right in the sweet spot. You were down, the kickoff of Hanukkah was the evening, but you were down at Aqueduct the other day, Thursday. You had your first time starter go out.
Yeah.
Give us a little update on the performance.
Scherzando, and it ran well, got a good education, and should move forward from this. I think we found a few things out. He's a McLean's Music, but he's out of a More Than Ready mare. And Gary came out of it saying, you know, they kind of ran away from him a little bit. Gary thinks he wants to go further. And, you know, the McLean's Musics have generally been middle distance, one turn sprinty types. And that may be the case with him. So Gary said, I don't know if we'll go a mile next time, but Gary thinks he wants a mile. So we're excited. This is a big, handsome colt. Dave Scanlon developed and got our partner, Marty Shapiro, and then a handful of the DT partners, Lee Einside, came in on him. Uh-huh. And I think we're going to have a lot of fun. Very sensible colt has given really a lot of indications that he's got some talent. So we're excited.
Nice. Wanted to see if you had any ideas or any thoughts about the weekend action, or go back to last weekend as well. True Timber in the Cigar Mile, the first grade one for Kendrick. That was kind of fun. Brooklyn Strong, they paid $5,000. They get a graded stakes win with that one. And then yesterday, I thought Tax looked pretty good on his way, I guess, now to the Pegasus. Any thoughts over the past couple of weeks?
Yeah, Tax did look really good. I thought the story last week was really a lot of fun. We had Kendrick Carmouche on radio. You know, here's a guy who's been riding 20 years, moved to New York, and I think was viewed as kind of a second tier rider for a number of years, and basically has shed that label this year. He's had a consistent meet wherever he's been, Belmont, Aqueduct, and Saratoga. And the difference with him is he's a guy that is aggressive. He's not afraid to just immediately go forward and use any speed that his mount has. And that makes him a valuable commodity in that jocks room where guys seem to grab a hold. You know, Andy talks about this constantly, grab, grab, grab. And Kendrick is having success because he goes forward with his horses. And it makes a big difference. If you put your horse in the race, you'd rather lose that way than, pretending you're going to rally, every single time with every single mount. So I admire what he's done. And, he's certainly a lot of fun. We had a really fun conversation, and his story is very interesting. And of course, his father, and his background in and around the game. He's really now knocking on the door of being, an A-list rider. And with a lot of the jocks, the big names heading down to Florida and Rosario going to California, he and Jose Lascano are going to spend the winter in New York, and they're going to win a bunch of races. Lascano's had a fabulous year as well. So, even amidst the pandemic and some of the difficulties around the game and around life in general, there's a lot of positive stories, and Carmouche and Lascano are two of them.
Yeah, won his first meet title the next day. Won the grade one on Saturday. The next day, he was named the meet leader for the fall, as well as Christophe Clement, so it was nice to see that also. All right, let's jump in and do a little, as I said, a little annual holiday gift guide for racing family and friends, and I'll kind of go down and go through the list the way the pictures came up on my screen here. First up, the book Sir Barton. Give us some thoughts on that one.
Well, the Sir Barton story, we talked about it for about 18 months when it came to light that Jennifer Kelly, who is Alabama-based and just loves racing, she's a historian and writer by trade, and she absolutely pushed every button in this book. She's got a historic perspective about the life and times of the era and the people involved, Commander Ross and Guy Bedwell, and then, of course, Sir Barton himself, who is the most obscure of the Triple Crown winners. One of the more obscure. There's a couple of others that remain, kind of less defined and less written about. But this book has more than just a horse story involving, the major principles. It really talks about how the Triple Crown became the Triple Crown. And of course, when Sir Barton, broke his maiden in the Derby and then, wins the Preakness in Belmont, nobody really celebrated it as anything other than, nice wins by a three-year-old. it was only later on, really, with the Gallant Fox that it sort of became apparent that, there was something tying these three races together. So it's got a lot of depth to it beyond just the horse story. And it also, of course, tells the rest of Sir Barton's career story, which in itself is quite good, including the famous match race that he's involved in Canada. There's a lot in here. And the book has gotten a lot of notice. It was a Dr. Tony Ryan Book Award finalist and didn't win. We will talk about the winner in a minute. But Sir Barton and the Making of the Triple Crown, Jennifer Kelly, she's got a new book that she's working on which is about Bel Air and the Woodwards. And that's her next book. This is from the University of Kentucky Press, who are so terrific. Thank goodness they weren't stripped of their funding by the previous completely insane governor, former governor of Kentucky, tried to take that money away, and people rallied around the University of Kentucky Press. So there's another book coming from her, but get Sir Barton's, that'll get you started.
Yeah, and speaking of history, and for folks who may be new to the game, Diane Crump, certainly a name worth paying attention to as well. And so there's a Diane Crump book on your list also, a bio of really one of the pioneers on the jockey side of the game, women's jockey side of the game.
I'll admit freely, I have not read this yet. And it was one of the books that came out mid-year, and it kind of got lost in the shuffle. And it didn't seem to have the same advertising or marketing initiatives behind it that a lot of the other equine themed tomes did have. And so Mark Schrager, the writer, and I'm going to get a hold of him. And this is a book that I want to read. And I would think that this would appeal to, a lot of people that don't know her story. For whatever reason, as much of a pioneer as she was among the female riders, I don't think gets the recognition that she deserves. So the Diane Crump story, I'm very curious, and I'll get Mark Schrager on to talk about the book.
And as I say, for folks who are unfamiliar, worth taking a look at that part of the history of the game. Certainly, she was a pioneer there. I'm scrolling down to the next photo, and I'm glad you tossed this in. I wouldn't have thought about this, but certainly this is one that you can pass on to family, racing family and friends. Prince from Greg Montgomery. We've had him on the show plenty of times. And boy, if you're a Saratoga fan, but just a racing fan in general, but the stuff he does focused on the Travers every year and whatnot. If you're looking for a little artwork for the home or the man cave or whatever, Greg Montgomery does great work.
Well, we have Greg on virtually every summer with the, the introduction of, the poster signings for the Travers. It's really an amazing story. And there's a book in itself, actually, the book that he did with Vic Zast, the late Vic Zast. And that's the first 25 years of Travers artwork. Greg, the way this evolved, he was trained in New Mexico, and he has that sort of Southwestern art aesthetic to his work. It started out, and for those that aren't aware, as you see that nice montage of his work, it started out where he literally would make the posters by cutting out pieces of craft paper, art level quality color paper, and he would make and basically put together, assemble those posters. And, it's evolved from that into illustration. And they're much more, obviously, the last 15 years at least is much more detailed and more involved. I love the early ones, and they're all available. I mean, Greg has now reissued copies of the prints that basically came out of circulation. And go to the website. It's a Shopify website. The easiest way to find his his shop, his online shop, is just do a search for Greg Montgomery Art, and it's Greg-Montgomery.myshopify. It's kind of involved, but just do Greg Montgomery Art, and you'll be led to the online store for all of his prints. And I've got 15 of them. And what I've done of late, actually, and this is something you can do next summer, you can take the poster of whatever favorite winner of a Travers you've got and go have Jimmy Jerkins, sign it, or Baffert when he comes to town for Arrogate, all the different ones. I've got Shug. I've got one that's signed by Shug. I've got Carl Nass and Ian Wilkes signed the one with Street Sense and Grasshopper. So, your favorite Travers winner is from the last 35 years is in this art, in Greg's artwork. Plus, there's more generic themes, you know, the ladies in big hats look, and so forth. So, Greg Montgomery, you can never go wrong. Reasonably priced. You don't necessarily have to get it framed. You know, you frame up his stuff, it ends up being $300-$400. But if you want to just give somebody a quick, a quick gift, give them a Greg Montgomery poster of Saratoga, no matter if they're Saratoga regulars or people that would, you know, are so looking forward to being able to come to Saratoga either again or the first time. Greg Montgomery is the artistic ambassador to the world, really, for Saratoga.
Yeah, we had him on this summer via Zoom, and this summer's poster, he put himself into this summer's poster.
He did. He did a Hitchcockian. he's leaning on the rail, coming up the chute from the paddock onto the track apron. It's pretty funny.
Yeah, very good.
I got a kick out of him doing that.
This one I'm curious about, Unbreakable, and subtitled The Woman Who Defied the Nazis in the World's Most Dangerous Horse Race. Talk a little bit about that one.
This is an amazing undertold story that came to light with the release of this book. I think officially the book, I think the quote-unquote release date is in January, but the book has been available for several months. And it's a story that, until I read about it this year, I was unfamiliar with. A woman by the name of Lata Brandisova, who was born into Czechoslovakian royalty, but who was unable to enjoy that, and basically grew up in modest means, but grew up with an equestrian, you know, background and equestrian training. And in the 1920s, around 1927, she was able to run in the Pardubice, you know, which is, essentially the Grand National of Eastern Europe. In Czechoslovakia's Grand National, for all intents and purposes. It's about a 4-mile steeplechase event. And it is not just grueling in its own right, as a 4-mile steeplechase is going to be. It's a particularly difficult steeplechase course, incredibly demanding, with hills up and down. You know, it's almost like an eventing, like going to the Land Rover, to the 4-star event at the Kentucky Horse Park when they do the cross-country equestrian side. That's a demanding course. This is for 4 miles, and Lata Brandisova won it in 1937. She's the only woman to ever win it. And she did it against a handful of Nazi cavalry officers that were sent to it to basically show off, you know, the Nazi superiority. So not only were they humiliated in the Olympics the year before, they then get pretty well humiliated in Czechoslovakia as well. This has got a lot of history to it, in addition, you know, to just the equine side. Richard Asquith, the author, and Unbreakable, really, really compelling. And I'll be surprised if this doesn't get optioned by somebody into a film. It's a natural.
I'm going to have to check that one out. That, like I said, I was intrigued just by the subtitle to hear the story there. All right, let's move on. Another one. We had David Hill on with us up at Saratoga via Zoom because he was talking about the vapors, which was a lot of fun because it kind of melds in with Saratoga fans because he's talking about hot springs, and that has a close relationship just theoretically with Saratoga and the way things developed at Saratoga with the gambling and the casinos and the racetrack and whatnot. And so, as I say, we talked to David Hill about the vapors this summer, but remind people.
Well, this is a book. I've been talking to Dave Hill about the release of the vapors for close to 5 years. And the story is remarkable in itself. It's a book that you can't call it fiction, but it's not a nonfiction either. It's a novel. It's about six different things. For those that enjoy E.L. Doctorow with Ragtime, or the book that it's been most closely paralleled with is Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil, which is a tremendous, it's best-selling I think the best-selling nonfiction or best-selling fiction book of all time, perhaps. David was brought up in Hot Springs. He's a native Arkansan, and his family is rough and tumble. Let's put it that way. And David Hill is captivated by the world of carnies and hucksters and gamblers and, you know, ne'er-do-wells of all size and shapes. And what this book is essentially a multi-generational history of Hot Springs and its evolution from not just a gambling mecca, but really the Las Vegas of the first half of the century. Before Las Vegas, there was Hot Springs. And you know, for those that have been there, I mean, it is as, seedy is not the right word, but it is as just sort of redolent of gangsters and of, you know, of canards and swindlers. And it just has a amazing atmosphere. And that's what the book is. It's basically a Southern Gothic tale with David using his family as the protagonists. Then he folds in all kinds of authentic you know, gamblers and mafiosa like Oney Madden, you know, who came to Hot Springs from New York and, you know, basically set things up for Capone and for, you know, the whole underworld of the era. It's spectacular. It's been up for numerous awards, and you know, David actually was cheated by the pandemic, because by all rights he should have been on a whirlwind tour, book tour for signings and at racetracks, and hopefully that will be allowed next year. I mean, certainly I hope he'll get back to Hot Springs and do something at Oaklawn, you know, if and when we can all, you know, attend places openly in person, you know, with post-pandemic in sight. I cannot recommend this enough, The Vapors by David Hill.
And I will also say, just recently, David Hill has announced he's got a podcast concentrating on gamblers. I haven't had a chance to listen, but that sounds like it's a lot of fun, too.
Yeah, it is. Everything he touches, you know, the racing industry, America's Best Racing and so forth, they latched on to him. I don't even know how. I never even asked them how they found him. But he started doing features for ABR a while ago, and I don't know if that's how I found him, or maybe a Thoroughbred Commentary ran a story of his, and I had him on at the start of a season at Oaklawn, and then it became a regular thing. That's how I learned about him working on the book. And after literally doing a draft of the book, almost basically completing it, he actually started again and redid the book, and he's much happier with the way this turned out than his first go around. But this is really a lifetime in the making, and you will literally read this in 2 days, 3 days. It's that kind of a book. It's going to just grab you right away, and I think people will just love it if they're unfamiliar or if they've been hearing about it all year.
That's an interesting story in itself, because for an author, that has to be a huge decision. All right, this version out, I'm fresh piece of paper in the typewriter. Yikes.
He's got, there are so many, I think there's at least one, maybe two of our conversations that are at the best of page for At the Races. I've had some of the most enjoyable visits with Dave Hill. It'd be, every time you talk to him, he's like an onion. You find out all these layers of things about him. You know, he's been published in The New Yorker and Esquire and GQ. I mean, look for his work, and you'll instantly become a fan. stuff comes out about him all the time. He told a story on Twitter inadvertently. Somebody had asked for one of those, you know, things, you know, tell us a story you've never about yourself, you've never told anybody. And he told this story about how when he was in high school, a buddy of his, not a buddy, but a kid that he knew from school robbed a bank. And the bank robber and the cohort are chased throughout Hot Springs. And somehow he ends up in Dave, he knocks on Dave's door. He had like a back door to his room, and Dave hid him in a closet as the police came looking for him. He told this story on Twitter. It's like every time I do anything with Dave Hill, there's like something remarkable, you know, bubbles to the surface. He did a thing for a year where if any panhandler, he was living in Brooklyn, and if any panhandler asked him for a handout, he would give them whatever he had in his pocket. He said he was going to do this for a year, and it turned into an article in, I think, GQ. And it's unbelievable. I mean, this is really one of those people in life who is basically a prism for life, and things flow like basically through him, and he interprets it in the written word for people. He's a treasure, yeah. Dave Hill.
Like you, I've had him on, well, for me, a handful of times over the past few years. But like you, I think I originally found his work over on ABR, and that's what attracted me and had put him on over the years. And as I say, you and I had him on talking about vapors this summer via Zoom. And going back again to a little earlier in the conversation, you mentioned the Tony Ryan Book Award, and you mentioned you talk about this year's winner, and it was better lucky than good.
This is a book that really defies
unique. Unique is, yeah, unique is the word, definitely.
It defies, I mean, it's essentially, it's an oral, well, first of all, let's say what it is. It's the product of a group in Louisville called the Louisville Story Project. And what they're doing is they're creating written transcripts, essentially, of oral histories of various topics. And what they've done here, going to the backstretch at Churchill, and also, you know, being referred to people who worked in and around the game in Louisville, it's astounding. And I'm just going to count. I want to get a feel for how many there are. I'm going to say there's 28 to 30 of these short stories. And there's a lot of names and a lot of people telling their story that you'll be familiar with, or names you've heard, like, for instance, Butch Lear, the longtime track super at Churchill. And how about Neil Huffman, Ben Huffman's uncle? It's tough to keep track. There's more Huffmans than you can shake a stick at. But Neil Huffman and Greta Kunstweiler, who has a real star-crossed story of some problematic times in her life. Then there's backstretch workers. Like Cristobal Trejo and Christina Bahena, you'll be captivated by this. There are so many emotional tales being told in here, people's lives as related, you know, to and through the racetrack, and more than anything, better lucky than good helps you understand the value of the racetrack in society in this era, because the racetrack is a safety net for people who don't fit in elsewhere in a lot of cases, or people that were born into a scenario that put them on the racetrack, or you know, on a on stallion farms, or on breeding farms, whatever form and shape put them, you know, on the road to be exercise riders, etc. And if you, frankly, if you are one of these people that complain and who are constantly belittling the industry, quote unquote, I would recommend you read this book, and it'll change your perspective. There's nothing about it, and there's nothing in it that specifically addresses, you know, the sport as we know it, and as some people seem to be disappointed in at every turn. The people and their dedication to the animals, it'll give you a better understanding of why the game exists and how invaluable it is, and why it's so worthy of our adoration and our dedication to it. This, you know, I knew when I read the first three or four chapters that this was going to win the Dr. Tony Ryan Award. And as much as the other books, like Sir Barton, we forgot to mention Justify, Lenny Shulman's book, you know, all the various other books that were, you know, very worthy. Sir Barton was a finalist. This was going to win because it was the most important book about horse racing this year. I mean, by a wide margin, and not just this year, in recent memory. If you want to, you know, buy yourself a present, if you want to give a, you know, give a gift to somebody that, you know, will be really moved about the sport and the people that make it happen, then Better Lucky Than Good is number one on your list.
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned it, because I had written down Justify 111 Days to the Triple Crown Triple Crown Glory by Lenny Shulman was one of the finalists to the award as well. Didn't want to forget our friend Lenny there. And finally, you had on your list as well the Travers book that Brian Bouyer and Mike Veach collaborated on.
This, you know, this isn't new. I didn't bring it upstairs. It's downstairs, literally on the coffee table, where a coffee table book belongs. it's a couple of years old now, but, you know, this is a... It's just an unbelievable labor of love by Brian and Mike Veach, and absolute must have for anybody, you know, that loves this big race, Saratoga's, you know, premier race, of course, every summer, and one of the, you know, easily one of the five most important races in the sport every single year. It's just wonderful. It's one of those things you literally, you know, you pick it up, you put it in your lap, and you read through, and you know, you read about a couple of different Travers every so often, and you know, once you've read, you know, the 150 of them, then you go back and start again. This would make a wonderful present for anybody that you know, that has a fan of the game and of the Travers on their list. I thought that important to include Brian and Mike's piece.
Yeah, absolutely. And tying back in, yes, cover art by Greg Montgomery. So it all ties back in as well. Steve, we'll let you go. We got to wrap things up. We appreciate the thoughts, the annual visit. I think there's some good ideas there. Again, not only for family and friends, but as you kind of alluded, pick some of these up for yourself as well. They're certainly worthwhile taking a look at. Appreciate the visit. Wish you and Tina happy holidays. And lighted tractor parade going on in Greenwich again this year?
They had to cancel because of the pandemic, of course. It would have been already almost a month ago if it was going to happen. However, for those that are driving around, if you happen to be coming out to Washington County, there are the kind of people, you know, the farmers and people that have access to tractors. They've got the tractors on their lawns, so they're all and they're also strategically placed around town.
Excellent.
There's a couple on the fairgrounds. There's one over by the hand melon market. And then there's a map, actually. If you go to the Greenwich, I think it's the Greenwich Facebook page, there's a map of where the lighted tractors are. So you can kind of drive around and you know, see the lighted tractors yourself. And since we went down this road, Seth, I'm going to mention something has transpired in town we've been waiting for a long time. Wally's has been completely renovated. The entire building has been rebuilt. And sometime very soon after the first of the year, Wally's of Greenwich is going to reopen. And Wally's, you know, to racetrackers, Wally's was an absolute meeting ground. Every jock agent for decades would have dinner at Wally's every night. And that's a tradition that goes back to the 40s. And Wally's fell on some rough times about 10 years ago, sat empty for this whole period and has been beautifully renovated. So those of you that remember Wally's of Greenwich, there's going to be a new Wally's, and we're all eagerly awaiting it. It'll be the centerpiece in town that it was for decades.
Excellent. We'll look forward to that. Steve, again, appreciate the visit. And as I say to both you and Tina, happy holidays.
Seth, best to you and all the viewers in Capital District and beyond. And thanks to Capital OTB for another great year. Enjoy the holiday. Stay safe. We're almost through this. Yeah. And we look forward to a great 2021.
Appreciate it. Steve Bick, again, you can catch him, SiriusXM's At the Races, every weekday morning, doing a great job covering the game. And, of course, summertime, sitting next to me, loose on the lead as well. And annually, we have the little gift guide. Hopefully, we gave you some great ideas. All right, I got to wrap it up. They're underway with the pregame show at NYRA, so we will wrap it up and send you down to Andy and Anthony, and they'll have some ideas. I'll be back in about an hour or so with OTB Live for a Sunday afternoon. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you in about an hour.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.